Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, June 27th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, defense for accused quadruple murderer Brian Koberger makes discovery motions at hearing today in court in Moscow. Idaho Republican Central Committee has no confidence vote in 15 Republican legislators and Governor Brad Little for not being right-wing enough and voting against the book banning legislation. U.S. Representative Dan Newhouse holds one-sided hearing on dam removal to save salmon. Out-of-state abortions from Idaho increased sharply in Washington in the year since Roe v. Wade is overturned. And 6th Street Bridge in Moscow is now open to traffic. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Accused quadruple murderer Brian Koberger appeared in district court in Moscow this afternoon as the defense filed several motions, including three motions for the prosecution to turn over multiple pieces of discovery. The Idaho Press reports prosecutors say they have given the defense everything they have right now. Koberger's attorney, Ann Taylor, asked for FBI lab reports from forensic testing and reports about Koberger's white Hyundai Elantra, which police confiscated in Pennsylvania at the time of his arrest, December 30th. Taylor also asked for training records for three police officers. She said that's important now that the prosecution has filed for the death penalty in the case. Latah County Senior Deputy Prosecutor Ashley Jennings said the training records are not necessary. Jennings said, "I would remind the court that several hundred investigators have been involved. Our concern with allowing training records for these few would open the door to obtain training records for hundreds of other officers, which can be outside our control." Taylor also motioned that the defense should receive records from the FBI's cellular analysis survey team, which investigators used to help track Koberger's phone data. Taylor said this was done in December. We are at the end of June. It's information the state agreed we should have. Taylor also told District Court Judge John C. Judge, "There is a heightened standard now that the state has filed their intent to seek death." Prosecutors say they are still waiting for the FBI records themselves. Jennings said the state may receive those records in the next few weeks. Judge took the motions under advisement and set a July 14th deadline for turning over the FBI records and other evidence. Koberger's trial for the four murders of UI students is set for October. The Idaho Republican Party Central Committee voted no confidence in 14 Republican House members plus Governor Brad Little over the weekend for their votes to uphold Governor Brad Little's veto of House Bill 314, which would have exposed librarians to $2,500 lawsuits from parents who feel the librarians or libraries exposed minors to material they deem harmful. The bill did not define harmful, and Governor Little said at the time of his veto, April 5th, the lawsuits would create a bounty system that could bankrupt small libraries. The no-confidence vote targeted District 6 Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston and 14 other House members. The Central Committee vote signals right-wing Republicans will target the 15 House lawmakers in next year's legislative primaries. On April 6th, the House voted 46-24 to override Little's veto, which was two votes short of the two-thirds supermajority needed to override a governor's veto. With the House vote, the Senate never voted on the override. The Idaho Republican Party Central Committee voted over the weekend to approve a presidential caucus procedure for next year's nationwide election. A press release from party officials did not mention the tally of votes in the Central Committee, but said the vote was overwhelmingly in favor. The vote says the Republican Party will hold a presidential caucus the first Saturday in March if the Idaho legislature does not reinstate the presidential primary by October 1st. A bill eliminating March school bond and school levy election dates, which the legislature passed this year, inadvertently eliminated the March presidential primaries in the state as well. There was a competing proposal to create a Republican state presidential preference convention at this weekend's Republican Party Central Committee meeting, in which party leaders would participate, which would have bypassed voters when choosing delegates to the Republican National Convention every 4 years. Caucuses require people to show up in person at designated places in their county to vote on presidential candidates. Under the Idaho Republican Party's plan, active duty military members who are registered as Republicans in the county can sign an affidavit swearing military service prevents them from participating in the caucus and can mail in their votes to the Republican Party county chair for tally in the caucus. Boise State University political scientist Jacqueline Kettler told the Idaho Capital Sun, "One key difference is primaries are run by state and local governments and generally paid for by the state or local government and involve voting on secret ballots, similar to how voters participate in other primary elections like state legislative primaries." Idaho Democratic Party leaders are set to vote tomorrow on a resolution calling for the legislature to reinstate the 2024 presidential primary elections, which have in recent presidential years taken place in March. Democrats in Idaho last held caucuses to choose delegates to their state and national conventions in 2016. That year, voters turned out in mass at the Ada County caucus site, mostly to vote for Bernie Sanders delegates, but they complained of having to wait in line for hours to go through the process. Idaho Republicans last held a caucus in 2012, abandoning it when the state moved to a March presidential primary. In 2012, 44,672 people participated in the Republican caucus in Idaho, but in 2016, when Republicans used the primary system to choose their delegates, 225,000 Republicans cast ballots. If the Idaho legislature were to act by October 1st, there would have to be a special session. Until last year, the state constitution only allowed the governor to call a special session, but last year voters barely approved an amendment to the state constitution allowing legislators to call a special session if two-thirds of each legislative chamber signs on. Organizing caucuses imposes considerable planning responsibility and expenses on county party organizations. Professor Kettler said the situation in Idaho will likely be especially problematic because of the uncertainty. He said it puts the county parties potentially in a pretty challenging position where they may need to start planning caucuses but not be entirely sure whether they are going to have them or not. For voters, it also raises uncertainty. We're still a ways out from March, but being confused about when you might be voting isn't necessarily the greatest thing for voters who want to participate. Planned Parenthood of Greater Washington and North Idaho has documented a 36% increase in out-of-state abortions in Washington during the first 5 months of this year compared to the same period last year. The increase in Idaho residents seeking abortion care in Washington during the same time frame was 56%. Democratic U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington shared the numbers on the first anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court reversing a woman's right to choose abortion care. Planned Parenthood of Greater Washington and North Idaho reported taking in 4 patients seeking abortion care between January and May of 2022 at its Pasco clinic, but there were 43 during the first 5 months of this year. At the Planned Parenthood Sunnyside Clinic, there was one abortion patient during the first 5 months of 2022, and there were 23 between January and May of this year. The organization reported a 724% increase in abortion care cases in Moses Lake. They said one Washington doctor saw abortion patients from seven different states in a single day. Seattle television station KIRO reports the overturning of Roe v. Wade has also impacted the number of people seeking sterilization procedures. Cantwell's office shared statistics from the University of Washington School of Medicine showing a tenfold increase in the number of people seeking sterilization in the last year. Washington has 46 clinics that provide abortion services.
A fund to provide long-term care to Washingtonians starts this week. Workers will start paying into the Washington or WA Cares Fund starting this Saturday. In 2026, they'll have access to up to $36,500 in benefits. Julie Sparkman is an in-home caregiver who was diagnosed with breast cancer 2 years ago. She's concerned the cancer diagnosis will make it hard for her to access private health insurance, but is relieved she'll have access to WA Care benefits.
Even if my private insurance never, ever, ever will pay for care for me because I'm medically complex before I even need that care, WA Cares can provide that for me.
Implementation of the program originally was scheduled to begin in 2022, but was delayed for 18 months while lawmakers straightened out some of the details of the program, such as exemptions for people who live in different states but work in Washington. Jessica Gomez is manager of the We Care for WA Cares Coalition, which is made up of health, worker, and consumer groups. She says benefits from the program can be used to pay caregivers, but they have a variety of other uses as well.
You can also use it for home modifications like building a wheelchair ramp or paying for a wheelchair or putting a chairlift in your home, meal delivery services, help with taking your medication.
Vicki Bickford is a home care aide with pre-existing health conditions. She says it's comforting to know a program like this is coming online.
It takes a lot of the fear out of the future because I know that just like Social Security helped to give me an income when the economy turned sour in 2008, this will help provide me with the things that I need just to stay alive, to stay safe.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family-owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
Oregon lawmakers have passed a first-of-its-kind bill creating minimum nurse-to-patient ratios in hospitals. House Bill 2697 creates minimum standards for the number of nurses on staff across hospitals, from emergency departments to labor and delivery units. Matt Swanson with the SEIU Oregon State Council says the legislation is a win for patients.
This law, when implemented, is going to mean that you will have somebody at your bedside that is well able to meet your needs, rested and has working conditions that really allow them to focus on the needs of the patient.
The Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems initially opposed the bill, but moved to support it after flexibilities were included, such as for rural hospitals. The bill now heads to Governor Tina Kotek's desk. Implementation will start on September 1st. Swanson says burnout among nurses accelerated during the pandemic, which is one reason why workers from across the state came forward to push for this legislation in Salem.
These are folks who care a lot about the communities they serve, and their voices were so important to developing a good law and giving the legislature the courage to take a bold stand on safe staffing in our hospitals.
The legislation also sets up staffing committees for other employees in hospitals, including pharmacists and environmental services workers. Swanson says there are enforcement mechanisms for the staffing standards in the bill as well. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Republican U.S. Representative Dan Newhouse of Sunnyside held a congressional field hearing in Richland yesterday designed to bolster support for keeping the four lower Snake River dams in place. About 400 people attended the House Subcommittee on Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries field hearing, which did not include public comments. The agenda of the hearing made it clear which side the Republican majority on the subcommittee was on, according to the Tri-City Herald. The meeting was called The Northwest at Risk, the Environmentalists' Effort to Destroy Navigation, Transportation, and Access to Reliable Power. Subcommittee Chair Representative Cliff Bentz of Oregon said the hearing will establish this panel has no enthusiasm for a breach or drawdown. Republican Representative Mike Collins of Georgia claimed the Biden administration was, quote, pressing a left-wing social agenda down our throats. Republican U.S. Representative Mike Simpson of Idaho, who has proposed a dam breaching plan that would include $34 billion to mitigate breaching's impact on power and transportation infrastructure, also attended the hearing. American Rivers Group Snake River Director Kyle Smith told the Tri-City Herald he was disappointed by the one-sided hearing led by Representative Bentz. Smith said, "I think it was a rehash of a bunch of common talking points that we've heard many times before." One witness was Quintama Research Services President David Welch of Canada. Welch said too little is known about ocean conditions to blame declining salmon runs on the four dams. Other witnesses included U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Northwest Program Director Beth Coffey, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Regional Administrator Jennifer Kwan, Bonneville Power Administration Administrator John Hairston, Benton County Public Utility District General Manager Rick Dunn, McGregor Company President Alex McGregor of Colfax, Todd Myers of the Washington Policy Center, and Michelle Hennings of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers.
Low-income families in Oregon will receive a boost from tax credit legislation passed in Salem. Lawmakers have approved House Bill 3235, which creates a $1,000 credit for every child from birth to age 5 in households where earnings are $25,000 a year. The credit phases out above that to incomes of $30,000. Tyler McInnes with the Oregon Center for Public Policy says his organization found nearly 55,000 children across all 36 counties will be eligible for the credit.
This policy, the Oregon Kids Credit, is really about targeting our resources at the state level to help the families in greatest need and ensure that we have a more economically just state.
The legislation passed with near unanimous support in both the House and Senate, with only one lawmaker objecting in each chamber. It now heads to Governor Tina Kotek's desk. The so-called Oregon Kids Credit is set to go into place in 2024. McInnes says the credit was modeled after the federal child tax credit, which Congress temporarily expanded during the pandemic in 2021.
We saw child poverty nationwide cut almost in half. We saw racial disparities experienced by children reduced significantly. And so we saw the impacts of families who are struggling with the rising costs of raising kids, what it could mean to just give them some added cash.
McInnes says the legislation also includes a mechanism for distributing the child tax credit in advanced quarterly payments. Before that goes into place, the state will have to find out if the payments would be considered income when determining eligibility for federal aid programs like food assistance. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The bridge over Paradise Creek on East 6th Street in Moscow has opened to vehicular traffic after the street was closed for about a year to replace the bridge. Moscow City Supervisor Bill Belknap told the Daily News the city had planned to open the portion of West 6th Street to traffic at the end of last year, but contractor Raz Construction decided to design their own bridge instead of installing a precast bridge. That delayed the project as Moscow City engineers had to approve the project change. Winter weather also caused delays. The bridge opened to vehicles, pedestrians, and cyclists Friday. It connects almost directly to a new roundabout on Mountain View Road that workers finished building last year. Belknap says the city still needs to install a steel guardrail, and he expects that to happen in July. The Pullman City Council will vote tonight on the six-year capital improvement plan for the city and also vote on the six-year transportation improvement plan for the city. The Pullman Planning Commission had already approved the draft capital improvement plan in May, voting unanimously that it is consistent with the city's comprehensive plan. At a June 6th public hearing before the City Council on the plan, people testified in support of projects related to the fire department. The six-year transportation improvement plan lists projects from 2024 through 2029 costing a total of $79.5 million. The transportation improvement plan calls for funding arterial street projects with grants from the Transportation Improvement Board, the Washington Department of Transportation, the Federal Surface Transportation Program, and locally received arterial gas taxes. The plan proposes funding transit projects with grants from the Federal Transit Administration, the Washington Department of Transportation, state rural mobility grants, and transit fund reserves. The Pullman City Council will also vote tonight on an addendum to an agricultural lease agreement between the city and Richard Druffel and Sons. The council will also vote on increasing the number of members of the cemetery committee from 5 to 7. The Pullman City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, it will be a little bit rainy tonight, possibly. 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, otherwise mostly cloudy, low 54, between a quarter and a half inch of rain possible. Tomorrow, 30% chance of precipitation, a chance of showers with thunderstorms also possible after 8 a.m., mostly sunny, high 80. And mostly clear Wednesday night and Thursday, low 56, high 85. Clear skies look to be continuing through the weekend with highs of 89 Friday and Saturday, 87 on Sunday, lows 58 Friday night and 54 Saturday night. Currently 74 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. You can also go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button as well. Also on the website, you can stream KRFP and listen to archived editions of all the shows KRFP has broadcast in the last 2 weeks. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. We'll have a Planet Nancy commentary followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio, 6:30 to 7:30. DJ Jer is on to play music for you, 7:30 until 9:30 tonight. The Brent Bent Show's on 9:30 to 11, and at 11 o'clock we'll have another edition of the Intercepted podcast featuring Jeremy Scahill. Stay tuned for more. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and by Moscow Ale House, with something for everyone in the family. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW.
That's 208-882-2739.
CARE-FP is also sponsored by
the Environmental Defense Institute, actively engaged with issues involving the Idaho National Laboratory, a Department of Energy nuclear site. EDI advocates for environmentally sound nuclear policy decisions.